La Comisión Permanente de Asuntos Indígenas fue la encargada de redactar este informe después de que algunos de sus representantes pasaran 3 días en esa zona de Standing Rock y presenciaran, ¿no?, la interacción entre las autoridades y los manifestantes. En este informe se denuncia, pues, que en la región se respira un ambiente de guerra, un ambiente de zona de guerra, con decenas y decenas de arrestos, y se apunta a que el gobierno estadounidense podría estar violando los acuerdos que tiene con los nativos americanos. Además, se apunta, pues, que tanto la policía como también miembros de la seguridad privada se habrían excedido a la hora de controlar esas protestas en Dakota del Norte. Ya hemos escuchado a varios manifestantes denunciar en el pasado abusos por parte de las autoridades, pues como por ejemplo el uso de balas de goma. Recordemos también, ¿no?, que las recientes protestas en la ciudad de Bismarck obligaron a cerrar el Capitolio local y también se bloquearon numerosas carreteras, por lo tanto, escenas de tensión ahí. En este ambiente continúan las protestas, pero no solo en Dakota del Norte, sino ahora en todo el mundo. Y es que el 15 de noviembre, un día de acción mundial contra ese oleoducto de Dakota del Norte, y concentraciones en unas 200 ciudades a nivel mundial, pero especialmente aquí, obviamente, en Estados Unidos, donde las protestas, por un lado, en contra de los bancos privados que financian este proyecto, y también, obviamente, contra las empresas responsables, como por ejemplo la empresa Energy Transfer Partners, que tiene su sede en Houston, en el estado de Texas. Precisamente los responsables del oleoducto ya han afirmado a los medios de comunicación que tienen confianza plena en que el nuevo presidente electo, Donald Trump, dé luz verde a la finalización del proyecto. No hay que olvidar que Trump ha invertido entre medio millón y $1 millón en esa compañía, en Energy Transfer Partners, y también, pues, que esta compañía habría donado una importante suma a la campaña electoral del republicano. Por lo tanto, se denuncian no solo los abusos policiales o la violación de tratados, sino también el posible conflicto de intereses entre las grandes compañías y la nueva administración.
In the shadow night, sometimes in the shadow night, I become spirit.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
El gobierno de Bolivia organiza una gran cumbre indígena. Freddy Morales amplía la información.
Los delegados a esta tercera cumbre de comunicación indígena, en el inicio de 5 días de encuentro, mostraron en una feria también las creaciones artesanales de los pueblos indígenas, quienes confían en que desde aquí se impulsen nuevos sistemas y redes de comunicación.
Tenemos que estar las mujeres en todos estos espacios como par, pero a la vez tenemos que proponer al conjunto de nuestros pueblos, hermanos y hermanas, posiciones políticas frente a lo que es la desinformación.
Desde la comunicación se pueden hacer las transformaciones tan importantes en cada país. Hoy están muchos hermanos de diferentes países aquí en Bolivia, Cochabamba, para poder entender, comprender qué papel, el rol y las estrategias que tenemos que planificar.
Participan de esta tercera versión de la Cumbre sobre Comunicación Indígena decenas de comunicadores populares, de organizaciones sociales y comunidades indígenas y campesinas.
Tenemos en diferentes medios de comunicación, tanto televisión y radio, en diferentes comunidades. Estamos al servicio del pueblo, de nuestras comunidades, haciendo conocer las necesidades desde nuestras comunidades.
Creemos que los pueblos indígenas, las organizaciones, las comunidades, también somos capaces de tener este tipo de trabajo, este tipo de tecnología.
El presidente Evo Morales, en la inauguración de este encuentro, se declaró víctima de los medios de comunicación social privados desde el inicio de su administración.
¿Qué me decía? A ver, cuando el compañero Chávez estaba con vida, Chávez era macaco mayor, Evo era macaco menor, y estaba grabado en los medios de comunicación. Por los demás de comunicación, Evo era excelentísimo asesino. Evo era parido por la llama, por la burla. Está firmado. Y algunos medios dicen, ojalá muera ese indio.
El jefe de Estado insistió en la necesidad de contar con medios de comunicación plurales y administrados por sectores sociales.
Una empresa privada de comunicación es para defender sus intereses. Y nosotros también tenemos derecho a tener medios de comunicación para defender derechos colectivos del movimiento indígena y de todos nuestros pueblos, no solamente derechos del movimiento indígena.
Participan de esta tercera cumbre continental de comunicación indígena de Abya Yala más de 1 millar de delegados. El primer congreso se realizó en Colombia el año 2000 y el segundo en México el año 2013. Freddy Morales, Telesur, Bolivia.
Rusia ha declarado que no será parte de la Corte Penal Internacional porque esta carece de la imparcialidad necesaria. Además, su trabajo ha sido bastante pobre. Aliena Nieves tiene más detalles.
Rusia se ha negado definitivamente a formar parte de la Corte Penal Internacional de La Haya. El Ministerio de Relaciones Exteriores aseveró que el organismo no cumplió con las expectativas y no ha llegado a ser una entidad verdaderamente independiente y de peso en la justicia internacional. Como prueba de su ineficiencia, la Cancillería rusa cita un ejemplo. Durante sus 14 años de trabajo, la Corte solo dictó 4 sentencias, gastando más de 1.000 millones de dólares. Además, Moscú subraya que la opinión del organismo sobre los sucesos de agosto del año 2008, cuando Georgia atacó Osetia del Sur, no ayuda a confiar en él. El Kremlin también incide en que las declaraciones de la Corte sobre Crimea y el Donbass son opuestas a la realidad. El presidente Vladimir Putin ya ha aprobado una directiva sobre la negativa de Rusia a participar en el Estatuto de Roma, en el cual se basa el funcionamiento de la Corte Penal Internacional. Moscú firmó aquel documento, pero no lo ratificó. Y José Luis Orella, profesor de Historia Contemporánea, cree que un organismo como la Corte Penal Internacional debería tener un pasado intachable, pero ha mostrado indicios de que no es así.
Creo que es un organismo que en el pasado ha dado ciertas nociones de influencias políticas de otros países y, por lo tanto, en la práctica no ha podido cumplir con las funciones en las cuales se le fue adscrito. Desde luego, al ser un tribunal en parte cuestionado por las razones políticas, las consecuencias cada vez son peores un poco para una institución de este modo, que tiene que ser desde luego blanco, inmaculado y no dejarse manejar por los poderes políticos, ¿no?
La máxima autoridad judicial de Venezuela declara nula cualquier acción del Parlamento en contra del presidente Nicolás Maduro. Erika Ortega tiene más detalles.
El Tribunal Supremo de Justicia venezolano ha decidido ordenarle a la Asamblea Nacional de mayoría opositora que se abstenga de ejecutar un juicio político en contra del presidente venezolano Nicolás Maduro. Esto por considerar en una sentencia que ha sido publicada a través de la web del organismo como un evento inconstitucional y falto de vigencia jurídica. El presidente Nicolás Maduro ha celebrado esta decisión que ha sido publicada en la jornada de este martes 15 a través de su programa radial y ha ordenado al Procurador General de la República, Reinaldo Muñoz, que de hecho emita un comunicado donde se expliquen los alcances de esta decisión. Por su parte, el presidente de la Asamblea Nacional, Henry Ramos Ayub, quien viene del partido opositor Acción Democrática, ha criticado esta sentencia y de hecho ha usado la red social para calificarse a ella como absolutamente nula. Ha dicho que ha sido emitida por la llamada Sala Inconstitucional del Tribunal Supremo de Justicia, una forma de irrespetar a este máximo organismo, e incluso ha dicho que ha sido promovida por el Procurador General de la República, a quien calificó como chimbo. Es parte del fuego mediático que todos los días viven los venezolanos y que, por cierto, la mesa de diálogo que ha sido instalada en los últimos tiempos, pues ha venido solicitando que cese este lenguaje ofensivo. Mientras tanto, es importante recordar que el próximo 6 de diciembre se va a llevar a cabo la tercera plenaria, donde se van a estar revisando cuáles han sido los acuerdos y el cumplimiento que se han dado de estos. De hecho, uno de los más importantes tiene que ver con justamente el desacato de la Asamblea Nacional al Tribunal Supremo de Justicia y qué pasa, según el presidente Nicolás Maduro, por la desincorporación de diputados de Amazonas opositores que fueron electos presuntamente a través de fraude electoral en las pasadas elecciones del 6 de diciembre. A un año de estos comicios se va a estar reuniendo la mesa de diálogo y hay que ver si se cumplirán o no con estos acuerdos.
Así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
dear friends of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we are reaching out for a new antenna location. Our current host is losing their house to the rotten scum banks. So we need a small space for our transmitter and computer box, about 2 feet by 2 feet, and a tree for the antenna where it sits hardly noticeable. We also have a tower for the antenna if you do not have a tall tree. It uses about 100 watts of power, about the same as a bright light bulb, and an internet connection. The ideal location would be, let's say, between West Side and 41st Avenue. Would you like to help? We can pay in exchange for your troubles. Please contact us. Write an email to frsc@freakradio.org or send a note to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California. Or, even better, call us during a live show at 831-427-3772. Help us out. We are your community radio.
This is very noisy, but it's wonderful to be back in Santa Cruz. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global unembedded independent international investigative news hour. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 101.3 FM, the first radio station in Santa Cruz that broadcasts Democracy Now! FRSC has been liberating the airways since 1995.
It was the biggest day of my life. It was the summit of my long career. But I fell so down and I jumped in my fear. The manager said that I shouldn't appear. I walked out onto the stage and started to speak. The first night I missed for a couple of years. I explained to the crowd and they started to cheer. And just when I wanted no one to be there, all of my friends were there. Not just my friends, their best friends too. All of my friends are there to stand and stare, say what they may. All of their friends did not stand. And I parted my hair and gave the impression that I did not care. But the embarrassment, the despair, came the day. Helped with a few large glasses of gin. I nervously mounted the stage once again. Got through my performance and no one complained. Thank God I could go back to normal again. I went to that home cafe where I had been in much happier days.
I don't know how much God has to do with it, but coming up next on the stream of Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
to request some glitchy, lumpy, nasty.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Bass or shitty top 40?
We're going to go for the shittier events of the day. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM in the old days, but unfortunately now we're just kind of meandering along looking for a transmitter site. So if you have any ideas, please let us know. You probably heard the transmitter ad that came on before the show. It is, in essence, our announcement or plea. We need a place to put down our transmitter antenna so we can get back on the air. But until then, we're going to be streaming, and that's what you're going to hear for the next 2 hours. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's a show that concerns itself with civil rights outside, a lot of voices from the outside. I'm expecting to get call-ins today from the Homeless Lack of Services Center Sidewalk. It's interesting, the sidewalk seems to be the place where the actions are happening, whether it's Tuesday night, where there's the Freedom Sleepers actually creating the safe sleeping spaces, not particularly comfortable ones, but safe nonetheless, that because of the community there, that the city council, the police department, the Parks and Rec, the Good Merchants of Santa Cruz, everyone else denies to the homeless population of Santa Cruz. That is to say, the right to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, particularly as the weather grows colder, without having their blankets snatched, their property taken, flashlights shined in their face at midnight, being directed to move on in the cold by well-clothed officers from warm patrol cars. And the sidewalks seem to be where this is all going on. So, for example, that was one example. A second example that I saw today as I drove down here was in front of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which calls itself the Homeless Services Center. It's at 115 Coral Street. And there was a
bunch of signs, a guy on the sidewalk. I didn't have a chance to stop and talk to him. I was racing to go elsewhere. But he, I believe, is going to be calling us or one of his associates around 6:30. So perhaps we'll be hearing from him. He could be listening to us if we were on the air. But unfortunately, again, we are looking for a transmitter and do not have one at the moment. Let's, however, turn to some more street interviews, which I've kind of finally been catching up with on this show. I wander the streets looking for folks who can give me news on what's going on, that news I might not otherwise be aware of. And often it's simply their personal stories, but that's fine. I'm going to play some of this now. This is actually from about a week ago. And it's outside the library where it's becoming increasingly a forbidden zone. I was due to meet an individual who lives outside Eagle, and he was going to be on the air with me. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. So what I'm going to be doing instead is playing the interview I had with him, but he had updates on harassment around the library where he has been sleeping the last few nights with his girlfriend and others, seeking protection in a group, both from the elements, loneliness, insanity, as well as vigilante groups, hostile people generally, and the accidents that can befall people that are much more easily dealt with if you have a community of people, even a small community, that you can get to assist you in an emergency or just even in a time of need. So let's see if I can hook this sucker up and begin. Shouldn't be too hard, although I've had my problems in the past. This was back on the 7th, which would be about a week and a few days ago. Monday, matter of fact. A week ago Monday.
I'm at the library.
This is a park.
This is a park right here. And it's about 6:30. We've got about 10 of us here, and we're talking with...
John.
And John, you said this morning an ambulance showed up?
Yeah, the police showed up as usual about 4 o'clock in the morning. And they picked everybody around the library to give them a ticket, and they called an ambulance to haul a little old lady out of the... off the property because she couldn't walk. Gave her a ride to jail in the ambulance.
Charming. And how many tickets did you estimate were given?
About 5.
And were this rangers or cops?
Cops this time.
And what did they tell you? Did they give you a safe, warm place to go sleep, perhaps?
No, I was across the street. Actually, down the street. But They said this, that the library is a park now. So if you're sleeping in the park after hours, you're going to get ticketed.
And do you know if folks are ticketed for sleeping or for being in the park after hours?
For both, I think. Trespassing and stay away order.
They got a stay away order as well.
Yeah.
So are the folks who are here...
And before we go on, just a quick... note, although many listening to this broadcast know these details, the sleeping ban is one code that the city is not enforcing on those nights when people are protesting. That is usually Tuesday night. In fact, it's almost invariably Tuesday night. And usually they are parked in front of City Hall on the sidewalk across from the library. Some of them at the library, some of them at the Greek Orthodox Church corner, some of them at the Civic Auditorium corner. But the areas that are in the interiors of these blocks, even though they're open to the public generally and have been for years, decades in fact, have been declared closed in order to eliminate homeless people and homeless protesters there. And I say that not because I'm trying to be paranoid or to, you know, impugn the motives of the authorities who did this, but it was specifically done in the midst of a homeless protest 6 years ago to stop that protest. I mean, there seemed to be no other reason to do it. They didn't present any reason. It wasn't sent through city council. It was just handed down by the head of Parks and Rec at that time as an edict, because Parks and Rec has a peculiar but powerful ability to declare any hours or any area out of bounds during certain hours. And that actually includes Pacific Avenue, ironically. So that's why you see Rangers stalking up and down Pacific Avenue, or striding, if you will. Guys in mostly men, I think, in white, and often giving tickets. And also, both the Rangers and the police, but most notoriously the Rangers, when they give out citations, have almost invariably give out stay-away orders, which, as I've talked about before, stay-away orders usually come from a court after you've been convicted of a crime at a location. You know, if you stole from a place, then they tell you to stay away. If you had assaulted someone and you're convicted of that, then you're told to stay away from that person or stay away from where that person lives. Well, this is done after a conviction usually, but in Santa Cruz, and it's almost unique to Santa Cruz as far as I know, I've never heard of it happening anywhere else. The city council, at the initiative of David Terrasas and the Parks and Rec Department, David Terrasas is a city council member, cooked up this law based upon a policy, a repressive policy, that was formulated at the library, I think by the former, I don't know if it was the chief librarian or one of her underlings. Supposedly we have a new, more generous librarian. I'm always sour grapes and skeptical and grumpy about this kind of stuff until it's proven to me. But the old library administration, although some praised the higher-ups, the administration created a whole set of laws that involved an escalating series of penalties. You first get kicked out for a day, then you get kicked out for a week, then you get kicked out for a month. And David Terrasas and some city council members, including Take Back Santa Cruz supported people like Cynthia Matthews and at the time Pamela Comstock, no longer on the council, but Matthews was reelected, created laws that were analogous to the library law about stay away first a day, and then you have to stay away for a week, and then you have to stay away for a month from the parks outside. The notion that banning someone from a building is the same thing as banning someone from a park area, and the whole situation was intensified by the fact that if you are banned from one area and you happen to go back there to go to sleep or rest, or you're there after hours, or you're violating any ordinance whatsoever there, and they've created some more, you can then be banned for a week, and not just from that area, but from all prior areas where you got stay-away orders in this situation. So it's a particularly nasty scheme. I had hoped, from looking at how the police behave in other situations, that it was meant mainly to intimidate, get moving or else. But now what it has been used for, and I've seen this because I went through the records of the Parks and Rec Department tickets a couple of years ago, and with almost without exception, and I speak trying to be accurate about this, every single citation, whether for sleeping at night, being in the park after dark, smoking, dog off a leash, urinating at a time when there are no bathrooms open, was accompanied by a stay-away order. Now, the stay-away orders are usually for 24 hours, but they escalate. So if you happen to be guilty of violating any park ordinance, any infraction during that period of time, and I am not entirely clear whether it's in that same park or somewhere else, then you get a week, and then after that a month. And this can be, violating an order is also a misdemeanor. So these rangers who are supposed to be protecting the environment are now acting as little judges in order to suddenly decide someone's guilty before they've even been tried of anything. And they are punished by being told to stay away under the penalty of a possible year in jail. Yeah, that's the penalty for a misdemeanor crime. That's my lengthy interruption to this conversation with one of a group of people who were across from the Freedom Sleepers a week ago Tuesday. That would be at Freedom Sleep number 70, the event that happens every Tuesday night, people trying to fight the sleeping ban and create a community spot at least for one night, which I encourage people to join with Freedom Sleep Out 72 when it comes up next Tuesday.
Last night, have they returned or are they staying away?
So far, they're staying away.
Although there's a crop of people here anyway.
Well, yeah, this is where we have happy hour.
Indeed. Anything else that you want to report?
That's it today.
Oh.
And we've been talking with...
Well, I can tell you about...
John.
And we have another report from...
From up at this, up at the homeless shelter.
Yes.
I was standing there today, and this woman pulled up to the, you know, the entrance to go to the gate.
Yeah.
The guy in the kiosk says, "Can I help you?"
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Yes." She goes, "I have a boatload of blankets for the homeless. I would like to donate them."
Yes.
He responds, "I'm sorry. You have to come back on Thursday between 1 and 2:30.
Really? What time did this person show up with the blankets?
Around 11, about 11:15.
Did you immediately rush up and grab blankets?
Actually, what I did was I chased her down the street a little bit because she was at the stop sign before she turned, and I waved, and she rolled down her window, and I said, "Tuesday nights, we have the freedom sleep. So by the library, by City Hall. Come on, come all, bring them all." She was like, "Thank you." She, you know, she turns around, and went, the guy goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, you have to come on Thursday." She's like, "I know you can't get my picture," but she was like, "What the fuck is that?" So, yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Rhonda Baird.
Who else?
Talking about it. Do you know how many blankets are there?
And I don't know whether Wanda's advice was followed, that is to say, whether she returned with the blankets to the Freedom Sleepers. I mean, often when people have a busy schedule, they don't want to have to arrange to go 2 days later to another spot, another time. So she may have given them to some other place like Goodwill that will sell them, or Salvation Army. And sometimes, I guess, some charitable organizations do give them away to their credit, as things definitely get colder outside. That's what I noticed as I came back here. I'm indoors myself. Let's hear some more.
Hey, oh, could you come back another day? Because we're so busy.
Thank you, Rhonda. Anything else?
No.
All right. Any other street reports, folks?
Rangers took my bicycle.
How long ago?
About 10 days ago. It was parked in front of Civic Auditorium over there. Somebody had stole the front tire. I parked it on the bike rack during daylight hours, just for a few hours, while I went about to fix it, and they just took it.
And you know it was the Rangers because...
There were many eyewitnesses, and when I confronted the Rangers later that day, they said they didn't want to talk to me. I was too hostile. I said, "You took my bike."
And have you been able to, have you made any further higher-up complaints?
No, I'm afraid I might lose my temper, so I've just decided to let that one go to the gods.
You are a patient, or perhaps a wise man.
It is a legal bike registered in Monterey with the Monterey Police Department as a recovery bike, and I built that bike with the bike church over there, and it's totally legit. I don't know what their problem was, but obviously bikes and bike racks are a problem for them.
Well, you're obviously a criminal type.
Well, yeah.
We can tell that.
I prefer outlaw.
Very good. Outlaws. When bikes are outlawed, only outlaws will have... Even they won't have any bikes. So.
True that.
So, did you get the name of the ranger who either A, took your bike, or B, that you tried to report it to and refused to say anything?
No. Too many... My secretary ran off with my account in a few years
ago. There you go. You got to... Help is hard to find these days.
That's right.
And we've been talking with...
Brian.
Thank you, man. So there's a meeting at Huff on Wednesday. I don't know if it's worth anything. We got free coffee at the Sub Rosa.
And indeed, we did have a meeting, and we had actually two meetings since that series of reports. Pretty nasty series of incidents, even though nobody was physically injured. Stealing poor people's survival gear, and a bike is a form of survival gear, or denying them access to provide blankets, telling them to come back later, even though the Homeless Lack of Services Center was open at the time. Harassing people at the library at night when they have no legal place to sleep, and who are outside, kind of huddling together. This is... It's kind of a form of cruelty, but even worse, it's a kind of mindless, automatonic, robotic cruelty that comes with sort of folks blindly following orders. And it's just... it pisses me off. So let's see what other kinds of exciting stuff I've got for you today. Well, here's some more stuff from the actual Freedom Sleep Out, number 70. And that happened again about a week and a half ago.
Here, talking with a drummer man who's reciting colors. Now, what does this mean?
Where do you get brown security down here? Why don't they go up the Poconup and take the gang members out the Poconup instead of coming down here and bothering me for having my feet on a bench?
Tell me about that.
Right? Why don't they do real crime? There's real crime up at the Poconup.
What happened with your feet on the bench?
Nothing. I was just airing my feet out on the bench. There's nothing. That's what people do in Santa Cruz.
And how long ago was this?
I've been doing this forever.
Airing your feet in a public place?
Oh, yeah. That's what
I do.
Feet
airing permit?
The doctor says I do that. And I got circulation now. They swim 6 miles a day. And all my naysayers are rotten pieces of shit, and I am Adonis.
Yes, and a man who...
I'm the Santa Cruz Tsunami Surf King. Survival for everybody. You should swim laps, Robert. You do good at it.
I should at least float laps.
Yeah, start slow and build up, man. It's good. Good deal.
So what kind of a drum is that? Wes, what kind of drum is that?
This is goes back like 7,000 years to Baha'i. Only the kings and queens. And it's primordial beat because it's wood. Sounds like you're coming out of a swamp. Oh.
And we have been talking
to the Buffalo Soldier.
Been listening to the drumming.
Up out of the mud.
It's Warren West.
Webbing.
Thank you, Warren.
Webbing. And I'm getting gills in my... That's the new gills in
there. I'll be back to get those gills later. Any quick street reports?
Yeah, I mean, like, how about... did you already do about the Poconips?
I have not. Tell me about the Poconips.
Oh, my God, dude. They decimated the Poconips.
I didn't hear about it.
The forces came in there, and they had their machines that ground up to earth about 2 feet, 3 feet deep. You know how many critters they killed, how many animals they destroyed in doing that? And how many trees, people should go out and look, see what they did without a permit.
Where is it most noticeable?
Go down to 9, just like... The first bend, you come to the first bend in the road, and you'll see where they've started. They started there. I don't know how far they're going to go because they didn't even have any permits. They didn't have anything that said that they were going to do this.
Did you demand they show you the permits?
Absolutely not. Yeah, this is all hearsay.
Yeah.
But it's something that should be thrown out there because that's what's being thrown out on the street. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's what he said, not she said.
And really, they did it so that they unearthed all this stuff because they didn't know if there was going to be bicycles buried or whatnot, and they were trying to get everything out of there. I mean, maybe they had some type of city ordinance going on. Maybe they trapped all the critters before they started doing all this stuff, but I didn't see any of that. I was out there. Those guys killed all those little animals out there. And I just wonder if they had a permit for any of that.
And we've been talking with a man anonymous at this time.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Of course, it's always sort of squishy-wishy when you get a story that is, A, lacks details, B, is second or third hand, and three, is said with a passion rather than... concrete details, but nonetheless, it was what it was.
We're talking with...
Hey, man, I just want to pull this out of the reel. I see a lot of good in the Rangers on their responsibility and stuff, and it's not really... Everybody knows the rules out there. If you smoke, boom, boom, they're liable to whoop it on you just like they did before. You know what I mean? That's in the game, yeah. But what I'm saying is, besides that, in the PD, everything's been so good out here. You know how come? If we had a good motherfucking Halloween and no violence and nothing played out, everything's going to be in place like it is right now, man. So what, we don't have all that, the bag of chips, but you know what? One of these days it will come around, but you got to believe in your heart. It will change for the better, not the worse. And you know what? I'm a believer, man. And I'm going to leave you with this, you know. Here today and gone tomorrow? No. We're going to be here everlasting life. Believe. Later. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you.
And I haven't been able to get, actually I haven't really sought I haven't made the sixth request to the police department for all the infraction ordinances for the last year, although I probably will again at some point if I turn my mind to it or somebody else wants to work with me on it. But in the past year or two, that has not been the case at all. The rangers and police, particularly the rangers, have been big into harassing people in the parks with not only, as I said before, sleeping tickets, but also stay-away orders. And if you looked at the tickets, you found the overwhelming majority of those were for people with a 115 Coral Street, that's the homeless lack of services center, address, or a transient, it would be put there, and a few were from out of town. But there were a few local residents, but not many of the hundreds of tickets they issued. So it's pretty clear that unless times have radically changed, and I'm not aware that's the case, my opinion differs from that of Chief, although who knows? He's been out there more than I have, at least personally. I just run around asking everybody's opinion and everybody's account.
Here we got some.
You want to say something? Who are we talking to?
Paul Garvin.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, we got a couple of different items. We won 20 jackpots in Reno. Just got back for three more wild and 10 Jack King Queen aces, all wild. And get so many lines that the machine shuts off.
A gambling man.
No, I came in with a dollar Gold West nugget, and it worked it up to like 72 cents, and then it's 400 million a screen when they figure it out.
How long have you been here in Santa Cruz?
Just got here a couple days ago.
What do you think?
All right. I may have found OJ's cards in Reno, too.
Well, leave it at that, and we've been talking with...
Paul Dolan.
Thank you, Paul. So I'm talking with...
Douglas Henry.
And Douglas, you're here for the night?
Yeah, I always come to support.
Have you been hassled by police here?
Many times.
What about last week? How'd they go then?
And they did come, but I managed to just avoid them. I'm just tired.
Do you usually sleep the whole night through here? Do you get awakened? What's the usual story?
Usually woken in the middle of the night and told to rearrange for some way. Even just to move a little bit. But woken up, kind of rude
shit to me.
And then kept awake for, quite a while, half an hour or so, while they wander around. And
what time do you usually get up?
I usually get up at 5 a.m.
And what do you do then?
Meditate. Actually, I get up earlier than that, but I don't want to sound radical.
You can be radical.
Between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. are the golden hours to meditate. That's when that's the golden hours. And I would go up at 2 and meditate till 5 and I stay awake at that.
Any hassles in the last week you want to talk about?
Yeah, I've gotten police just tell me to move on and consolidate my things. And first they come and say it's okay to sit there. And then they come a few minutes later and say you got to consolidate your things. And they say you have to move or they're going to take your stuff.
Are these the same cops or are they different cops each time?
I always pretty much see different police myself. That's my experience, but then I don't pay attention too much because
when was the last time this happened to you, Doug?
Yesterday.
And where did it happen?
Along the side of the wall. They confiscated some things after.
Here at the city hall?
Yes. First they said it was all right, then they said, now you got to consolidate, then they started confiscating things.
Are these rangers in green, cops in blue, or security guards in brown?
If I'm not mistaken, they were maybe had light brown shirts on or light tan.
First alarm, perhaps.
Could have been. Could have been.
How many were they?
Two.
And how many were you? And were you alone, or were there others?
Actually, I believe first alarm is in light blue. Just a quick correction: the tan or brown is the deputies who are the county law enforcement or regarding homeless. Armed thugs, and of course there's also another security force called the Panther Protective Services in black, and it reminds one of local SS wannabes, I don't know. I haven't seen much of the Guardian Angels, by the way, which has been a matter of concern to some. These are out-of-town vigilantes who want to protect the public. Some people actually regard them rather highly. I've never had that opinion, but I don't really know that much about them, and I had not had much, certainly much personal contact in the last 10 or 20 years with them at all. I think we may have had some contacts in the 80s or something in different cities, but I think they came from the larger cities. There was supposed to be a sort of a force that was going out to get the drug dealers and that sort of thing. I don't know. I'm improvising here, and I don't want to speak out of my poo-poo, so to speak. So let's hear some more from Freedom Sleepout 70. That was the one before the most recent one, and the next one's going to be number 72.
There were others that had scattered and left, and I just stayed there.
About what time of day was it?
Maybe 3:33.
So the only thing that they were insisting was that you leave the... You get up and leave?
At first it was okay to be there, and then we had to consolidate the stuff, and then we had to move or the stuff was going to be taken.
So they got you to move by threatening to take your stuff. How much stuff did you have?
Well, I had enough to... It was heavy, and it was hard, but I got it out of there.
But was it taking up all kinds of room, or not?
Not really. About 4 or 5 feet, as long as my bike. But I'm only there temporarily to figure out where I'm going to go from there. I don't want to stay there. I mean, that's very temporary for me. I just happened to be there when they came, and then thinking that I was just there for a few minutes. I didn't argue with them. I left right away too, because I didn't want to be there in the first place forever. I'm just taking a little break. I've got a bad leg, and it's very bad.
Gotcha. And we've been listening to the true story of
Doug Henry.
Thanks, Doug. Should be on free radio Thursday evening or maybe Sunday morning. I'll give you a card if you want, if you haven't already got one. Okay, we're talking with
Daryl Larkin.
And Daryl, you're in your personal motor car here, I should say. What do we call this thing anyway?
A motor scooter.
What is it?
Motor scooter.
It looks like a little motorbike, but it's sort of a motorized wheelchair.
Well, it's a scooter, really.
A scooter. So, you're here at the Freedom Sleepers Protest 70. What brings you here?
Well, they've been talking about the ban on homeless sleeping ban. So I need to step in here to give my 5 minutes in that place.
I'm catching some of this.
All right.
Well, me too. I'm not here, but I oppose the sleeping ban. Anything happened in the last week you want to bring up?
I don't know. You went tonight.
You intend to stay in the night?
Yep.
Sweet dreams.
All right.
You have a good night, man.
You too.
And we've been talking to?
Daryl Washington.
Thank you, Daryl.
Yeah.
It's pretty early, around 7. Well, actually, it's around 6. There's already one person laid out in a sleeping bag on the sidewalk. And Max is serving food of some kind. And I guess
we're... Can't stop these giant termites.
Damn straight.
Oh, right over there.
And Max is an activist from Monterey who has actually been with the Freedom Sleepout with breaks, but comes all the way over from Monterey to do this. He works during the day. I think it is a 9-to-5 job, and then he drives over here to support homeless people. He's also an activist who's active with folks in Monterey. Was part of the freeway blockade a couple years ago. That was happening in Monterey around the same time the one in Santa Cruz was, or at least it was in the same 4 or 5 month period. And he's one of the stalwarts. He was dishing out food Tuesday before last when I was there. As we listened to this, that's what I remember.
Black bag.
What you got to eat, Max?
Soup.
And what's this is?
Soup.
Okay. Thank you. And there's a tureen of soup. And we're talking about maybe 15 people here is my estimate.
No, this is not the same guy.
Any street reports?
What do you think?
You tell me. Nothing to report. Well, I don't know. I'm not out here. You are.
Trump wins, I don't be scared.
Well, what about in Santa Cruz? Any feeling about the local town?
And this was, of course, this was election eve, November 8th, and the final results hadn't come in, though they began to come in as the evening continued. And I don't know if there was much reaction that I got on tape to the Trump victory, but you'll probably find some of it oozing through or raging through in some of these interviews.
Santa Cruz.
Take care, man.
With 3.5 million homeless nationwide, most ever, there were Hoovervilles, there were Reagan ranches, now there's Obama barracks. When is the populace going to wake up and say enough is enough? When is it time to put an end to it?
Good question. From Oceanside as well, yourself?
No, O.B. Wall.
And what do you make of Santa Cruz?
I love it. I come up here once a year, once every other year. I'm sorry to see the problems up here, but I've been all over California, Garberville, Ridgecrest, Gold Coast, Coast Gold, San Diego, and it's the same everywhere. And as I said, the populace needs to wake up, and it needs to be equality for everyone.
I agree.
And the $35 and $50 million mansion along the coast in Southern California.
Do you see any change in Santa Cruz from when you were last here?
Yeah, it's a little bit more angry. Everywhere I go is more angry.
You talk about the housed or the unhoused or both?
We've only been here hour and a half this evening, but just the hostility coming down the street is apparent.
Interesting. And this is based on people turning away or muttering or throwing things, what?
Cursing each other out, yelling at everybody, resentful to talk if you ask a question, trying to locate things or get information.
And we're talking about upper middle class citizens or homeless people?
Across reference, a lot of the college students seem to have a lot of animosity. The more affluent seem to be very intolerant of everybody right now. The homeless that I am seeing, there was just an argument here next to me because somebody thinks something is missing.
Yeah. And we've been talking with, if you want to say,
Irv.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Should be on free radio maybe Thursday evening or Sunday morning. Here's my card. It'll also be archived.
Okay. Thursday evening we should be in Garberville.
Well, give my regards to Garberville.
Okay.
I'm Robert.
Hey, welcome.
So I'm here with Keith McHenry, Katzenjammer Keith, as I call him, at 7:15. And what do you think of your man Trump pulling ahead?
Oh, he's going to win. It looks good. We should be. I already ordered my brown shirts. I am ready.
You got your boots.
I got my boots.
Well, you know, that could be something. Of course, with Hillary, you need to be able to parachute over Syria.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it looks like if Trump wins, at least we're spared the World War III we were worried about.
Depending on his mood at the moment.
Right, yeah. But it won't be the same World War III that we're worried about. It'll be the different one.
It'll be a little different. It'll be kind of a change of pace.
right, yeah.
Now, you also have some words about what's been happening with food and bombs in other cities. At least that was what I heard when I spoke to you last.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. There's been This letter that was sent by the library, the head of the library department in Olympia, Washington, where they were claimed that it was causing the library too much effort to continue to let Food Not Bombs share food on library property, and that, as said in the past, people will be arrested for trespassing if they attempt to share food on any city property.
Well, here it's if they share sleep or share sitting their butts down on the wall. I guess they're... So it's a kind of a very kind of canny strategy, a very clever in its own sort of nasty way strategy. You're not going to arrest people for serving free food, which is what Food Not Bombs has often been faced with, including in Santa Cruz, though not recently. Santa Cruz arrested me and many others, including Keith. Mostly locals, though. They actually didn't arrest Keith here. They arrested me and a bunch of other folks and around the turn 1988, 89, 90, and then again 92. But they here and elsewhere have been arrested. We're arresting people for serving food in violation. They called it a health code. You're doing it without a permit, or you're doing it more than three times in 90 days. State code in California. You can't have a picnic unless you have a permit. If you do it more than three times, and of course, what they really wanted to do was get rid of the shame of homeless people being fed in public. There were never any serious health complaints, or actually any documented health complaints that were pointed out. They simply relied bureaucratically on the fact that they didn't have appropriate permits, or when they attempted to get them, of course, they weren't given them. Or they suddenly found that the permit process had itself mysteriously disappeared. I actually, I was convicted of this in San Francisco back in 1993 and served a month in jail 3 years later. Because the permit process, which Keith McHenry insists he's been to the seeking a permit in San Francisco during that period 25, 26 years ago, more than 100 times. I presume he could probably document this if he dug into his old records. I used to keep rather elaborate records of this. I can't vouch for that specific figure, but Keith tries to be accurate about things. I don't always agree with him on all things, but I think in this matter I do, because at the same time as I was arrested for serving free food, the same officer, the very same officer in San Francisco who arrested me, was giving out a flyer advertising Food Not Bombs, or mentioning it as one of the areas where Food Not Bombs serve food, put out by the city of San Francisco itself as one of the free services that was available to poor people. Even though Food Not Bombs gets no money and had no connection with, in fact, is in rather strong opposition to most of the policies of the San Francisco authorities, at least was, and I'm sure pretty much probably still is. In any case, there's a new strategy being used, which is you don't go after people for sleeping or being in a sleeping bag or even for sitting or for loitering. You go after people for trespass by suddenly declaring all kinds of areas closed, either period, as they do, and they did in Santa Cruz on the levee to drive away the drummers about a decade ago, when the drummers had been driven away from the farmers market and then driven away from other spots. They tried to go to the Wednesday drummers, the drum circle, as it was called. But they will simply declare that during certain hours you can't be there. No one can be there. And it's done just by edict. There's no justification that has to be shown, no crime stats for removing the right of the public to be in a certain place, particularly around their own public buildings. It was done sort of just arbitrarily in order to, as I said, it seemed pretty obvious to me, although I have never seen it written in a memo, to remove protesters both from the county building and from the city hall area, and again for the last year to remove the freedom sleepers. And so it looks pretty bad when you arrest people for serving free food, particularly if it's a 92-year-old man, as they did in Orlando, Florida, or the head of a church, as they did in Southern California, or just young people with Food Not Bombs, or middle-aged people like Keith McHenry, or older people like me, whatever. But it's okay to say, hey, well, look, they're violating the rules. They're trespassing. They're deliberately trying to be arrested. They're anarchists, you know, that sort of thing. And it is true that a lot of us feel that the spaces of the community, if you're not abusing them, need to be open to all of us and not under the control of some bureaucrat who can make political decisions as to who can be there and who can't. But I think it's also the case that the real purpose, at least I know with Food Not Bombs, is which has a very militant, nonviolent policy, that they're trying to organize folks into supporting radical changes. But around the issue of serving free food, it's vegan food, it's food that doesn't go to waste, that is discarded by others, it's people forming their own community, and poor people serving poor people, so you don't have this sort of contemptuous compassion or pseudo-compassion that comes with charities at churches and so forth. And also people are empowering themselves and realizing that they have the power to sustain and support each other. And so this is a threat to those who want people to be dependent or just gone from an area. But let's hear some more of what Keith has to say about the situation that, again, in Olympia, where apparently the librarian or the library or the authorities want to drive away Food Not Bombs off of library property.
Let's share food. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, and then the other thing is that Palm Springs, California, actually also decided that they're going to move their shelter to the edge of town, and it's actually, I think it's 2.5 mile walk from the last bus stop to the shelter. And I received an interesting series of emails from a newly appointed member of the city's homeless task force, her specialty was behavior. And she was asking me these actually earnest questions. She turned out to be quite a young college graduate, just graduated, and feeling that if you could end homelessness if you altered the behavior of those living on the streets, and a really crucial way of doing that would be to deny them food, water, and hygiene products, and that somehow through that their behavior would be changed and they would end up no longer being homeless, and that was really the route to...
You know, this is interesting. It reminds me of an illness described by doctors in the 1850s called, I think it's called hydromania, I haven't got it quite right, but it's something like that, which involves the ailment that slaves have, which is this obsessive desire to escape, which if they can be controlled, this illness can be dealt with, it can make a slaves a heck of a lot happier.
Yeah, right, something like that. So, that's happening. Fortunately, hey, Max, wait. You did a great job, man.
It was already all distributed.
Excellent. Thank you, Max. Thank you so much. That's so cool. So, we'll be here. So it's pretty fascinating. And then, a church group wrote me. I don't even know if I don't know if they even have a building or anything of that nature, but they're a Christian group. They've been sharing food and this community on the Columbia River in Washington State near Walla Walla, whose name I can't remember right this second, the name of the town. Ponce or something like that?
Pulso?
Yeah, Pulso? Yeah, I forget. Anyway, there was a very beautiful conversation I had with them. And they were they were really upset because that like us here, you know, they'd grown very close to the people they're sharing food with. They're, you know, they feel like it's family. And what they were told was that they had to stop sharing food, but they could potentially get to share food outside if they could get permission from a property owner in the warehouse district to let them use their parking lot.
And we interrupt this rather interesting discussion by Keith McHenry, because here we have the real powerhouse behind Food Not Bombs, the notorious sleepless Abby Samuels, who's actually taking a vacation of a kind, or maybe doing other business. She's going to leave that. You're going to be taken away. Freedom Sleeper 72 is we have to do without you. Isn't that the story?
Just for a month. We need people to help out, but just for a month.
And I know that you you were looking for someone to video the Rangers. Why don't you tell us about the Ranger, Rover, Ranger, Wrecker, those folks that are coming around in the Freedom Center?
Yeah, so the issue, what's happening, the Rangers are coming, and they're making up, they won't tell us what they're trying to cite people for, but they're looking for garbage. A person might be sitting there with part empty plate of food, and they want to take it from them. Partially so they can fill up their truck and pretend that we've left trash. That's what I'm worried about. That's what they've done all around the country. That's what they did with Occupy, saying it's a health hazard, when our place is more clean than when we came the evening before. So I asked them, please come back after you left, and you will see there is no trash, but they refuse to do that. They don't know the ordinances about lying down. They don't care about the ordinance. When I asked if they wanted to see it, the main ranger, I guess he's the head of the Rangers, I don't know the pecking order, but I think his name is Albert. And he was very rude, doesn't want to meet with us. We sent him an email. He said he refuses to meet with us to explain what the issues are. So he said to speak to his, I think it's PIO. I'm not sure what that stands for. We asked, do you have a name? He says, nope, don't know any names. So this is what we're dealing with. I'm very concerned because I'm going to be away. Keith is going to be away. We're going to Standing Rock this Tuesday. And then when we come back, we're gone for a month. For health reasons, we're going away. So, and when we come back, we'll continue on with the Freedom Sleepers. But for this month, we really need people to come and videotape. It seems that when someone is videotaping, they're a lot less, they're not as, they won't jump in and take people's things. We're able to save some people's items. They claim they were going to take it away because it's abandoned, even though we know whose it is, and they were gone. And because they're gone for, I don't know, more than 5 minutes, they think they can just take someone's backpack, sheets, and bedding. It's outrageous. I'm pissed, and we need people. We need help.
Jawohl. So if anybody is interested, Abby, how should they get in touch?
Well, we're available the entire time that we're not in Santa Cruz by phone, except at Standing Rock. I heard the phone for 6 days. We might not be available very much. But you can call either Keith at 575-770-3377 or me, Abby, at 831-824-4343.
And if you have trouble remembering those or you haven't got a pencil, just call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will give you those numbers again or pass on messages or whichever you wish. So, Abby, I know you stopped in briefly. Feel free to hang out if you wish, but is there more you want to say about any of this?
I just want to see the time. I have about 3 more minutes. We really want to start a lawsuit. Which I was going to tell you offline, Robert, unfortunately, one of the issues is that we need information from people, and a lot of people won't show up or don't come through. A lot of the people that are on the streets, understandably so, because their life's so intense. So even this morning, I try to get a hold of one of the very dependable people who lives on the street, and I asked him if he can meet me in an hour and a half, and he did not show up. So these are some of the issues that we're having with trying to follow through with some of the things to do this lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz. But I have hope. And we're going to just keep on pursuing it until we get it right. And you've had that experience too, Robert.
I have. I had it this evening.
Yes.
And Eagle, don't feel shy. Get in touch. We can try again. You know, Abby, you went to the American Civil Liberties Union board meeting last night, and I actually sent an email to the acting chair, Vice Chair Steve Plaich, suggesting a follow-up on the houselessness forum, where that would be simply sort of a brainstorming session to figure out, you know, I know the forum was a big deal for the ACLU. They had to put together a lot of stuff. It required renting a big room. It was very successful in terms of the number of people who showed up. Mm-hmm. I thought, and the stories that were told, some said it was not so successful, and I understand this, in terms of actually coming up with a series of what are we going to do next. And I was thinking there could be an informal, but, you know, ACLU-supported meeting where people could sit around and hash some stuff out, present some proposals.
Well, we have about 10 topics yesterday that we went through.
Uh-huh.
I apologize. I saw your email, but I did not. I was too busy. I have a full-time job.
Not only so, you. I mean, I just
whatever. It did not get on the agenda. You know, it's a good idea, Robert. We can add it to the agenda another time. I think it's important.
Mm-hmm.
We did spend a lot of time speaking with some of the issues. I do think the forum was very successful
in the sense
that it gave a lot of power to a lot of people.
What did you talk about at the ACLU? What is coming up for folks that the ACLU you would point out that you see as something
well,
positive?
Well, one of the things that we're, the Laura's Law, we're investigating that and trying to make statements against Laura's Law, meeting with the different, some of the people are going to be meeting with the county supervisors to find out what's going, if they're planning on to implement Laura's Law, which Laura's Law says that if a court thinks that a person needs medication, then they can force them to have medication for mental illness.
And there's been a lot of propagandizing in favor of Laura's Law by the Take Back Santa Cruz group, by NAMI, National Association of the Mentally Ill. In fact, I believe even last night I heard from Wes White, as you know, the videographer who supported the Homelessness Forum and has supported the Freedom Sleepers and has done his own Salinas organizing, an amazing amount of energy that guy has. He went to this mental health shindig where the head of the county mental health or some uppity-up guy there was, you know, saying that Laura's Law was misunderstood, and you'll see that on the Take Back Santa Cruz website. You'll see forced medication? No, it doesn't require forced medication. And that's technically true, but it gives the judge the power to do that. And it also, as I remember, and I'm remembering reading it, but it was passed in 2002 or something, and it only became active more recently when counties, one by one, are passing it. I think 14 or 15 counties in California have now passed it, including San Francisco. But there is a much weakened standard for holding someone against their will or requiring them to take medications, which a lot of people feel, and I think with some justification, aren't always the best alternative. It depends on the situation for folks.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on, you know, I mean, everyone can dope yourself up as much as you want, and sometimes it helps. A lot of us recreationally do that. But in any case, Laura's Law was one topic they discussed. When Steve Plaich gave me a very kind of quick rundown of the agenda, which was rather extensive, do you remember anything else that came to mind?
Sure. We talked about the Freedom Sleepers. We talked about the body cameras. We're trying to get meetings with, I think they're going to be discussing it on December 22nd. November 22nd at the city council meeting regarding the Santa Cruz City Police getting body cameras, and we want to make sure that they have a really strong, guidance, not just guidance, but...
Public accessibility to the video, perhaps?
No. I don't think that's one of them.
That's one of mine.
Yeah, I'm sure. But no, it's a list of things that Santa Clara was the first one to implement surveillance really, really strongly. It's the strongest one in the country right now is Santa Clara. So we're trying to do similar things here in
Santa Clara. I'm not sure what you mean by strongest, but anyway, so you're working on that issue.
It is from what I've been told, it's the first one of its kind in Santa Cruz.
I know the ACLU in San Francisco has been looking for assurance that the material taken by the police, first of all, will not be reviewed by the police officers before they write their reports. That's one thing.
Well, this is a problem because even in the sheriff's office, they are going to be reviewing it before, which
well,
I think is horrible.
I can imagine. I understand completely.
Yeah.
The sheriff's office has recently declared it doesn't have to open up to show you who's gotten citations when. It's in violation of state law on that and continues to do that, as numerous police agencies do.
So there are a lot more things on the agenda I can't remember, and I have to go, but I want to say one thing to you, Robert, that I really appreciate all the hard work you did as far as the RV law from the county of Santa Cruz, that you have really made amazing steps in actually changing things. So I'm really impressed.
I wish I had, but I certainly have been trying, and who knows what's going to happen. Thanks, Abby, for coming in.
I know you don't take
praise well.
Praise well.
No, I do. I if you had more time, and we will talk about it in the future, and I will talk about it on the air soon. The county has is now got its head up the ass of the Coastal Commission and vice versa. The staff, they are trying to find a way to do what Los Angeles did, is find a way to criminalize, even though the Coastal Commission has said, don't criminalize RVs for people who have no choice, unless you have all places where they can go. Thank you, Abby, for being with me.
Thank you so much, Robert. Have a great evening.
Come back again. And don't get lost in your travels.
Okay.
So your gender-free radio, that's no longer on the air, but it is a stream at freakradio.org, which I'm sure all of you know, simply by looking at your computer. I'm going to play a little bit more of Keith McHenry's discussion of Food Not Bombs events, but I'm saved by the bell. Looks like someone is actually calling in. I've got to be, I am grateful. Let's see what we can get here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is this Robert on Talk Radio?
It is Robert on Talk Radio. Who is this?
This is Michelle Capriola, live from the shelter.
Ah, Michelle, I thought you were going to call at 6:30, you bad woman.
Oh, well, I tried. Actually, it was about 6:40.
It's 5 after 7.
I was calling the wrong number.
I'm glad to call. I'm glad you're here. So are you in front of, not City Hall, but the Homeless Lack of Services Center, perhaps?
Yes, it is. Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Well, you know, I drove by there earlier. I had no time to stop because I was rushing to get my car smog. But I think you saw me, and maybe I waved at you and shouted, oh, call
me. Yeah, we did.
You know, and so there are a bunch of signs I couldn't read. What did the signs say?
Well, they talk about discrimination for the color of their skin, how they lie about having case management. They actually had a meeting of five people where my boyfriend was discriminated against by a case manager, actually the housing navigator. And he yelled and screamed at me first in the library until he made me cry. And then, so my boyfriend decided to go there and do our housing search, and this was the guy who's heading it. And he's black, and no offense to anything, but he got started yelling at Brian too, but then the next person he talked to was a person of his own race, in which he was really nice and was laughing and joking. Oh, yeah. And I have been here 8 months, and it took me 2.5 months of every single day trying to get a case manager, which Phil, the program director, professes that is part of the package deal with the SEDAT in getting housing, getting affordable housing. So I couldn't get a case manager myself, and I live here. And it was all behind. They didn't want to give me a case manager because Brian had filed a complaint for discrimination. Well, they never even answered the complaints. He turned in five complaints after that. They, the same day they gave this person 30-day vacation, they gave my boyfriend a 30-day eviction notice. So, in other words, when the day he goes out, the guy comes back from vacation.
And so, what was the nature specifically of the discrimination complaint that Brian filed?
The discrimination, Brian, can we get over here, babe? The discrimination complaints, what were they? Okay. See your question answer.
It's about him not doing what anything for
me. Yeah, it's about joke.
Every time I try to talk to him, he'd chew me away. He'd tell me to come back another day.
He'd chew him away, tell him to come back another day.
He did nothing for me.
All he does is tell me to come back another day, this and that. He yells at me.
he's mean. So I put in, asked for a new worker, and they won't talk to me about it at all. But they won't even acknowledge that I put in a complaint for him.
Brian, what's the name of this guy?
Joe Price. And I have a letter from them that they're kicking me out because I wouldn't go see him twice a week after I put in that I just wanted a new worker. He's being very mean. He doesn't help me. And I've got the letter right here that says that since I didn't go see him twice a week, they're kicking me out.
And how long have you been at the – you're currently, what, on the Pauley Loft?
Yes. I've been here 8 months without a case manager. And they said I should have been doing all kinds of stuff, but no one told me what I was supposed to be doing. That's why they're supposed to have case managers for us, from what I understand.
And how many folks are in your situation in the Pauley Loft, or is yours sort of a rare situation?
I would say there's probably half the people there have the same situation as me.
Go ahead.
Everybody who deals with Joe has the same experience with him.
Does everybody in that, how many people don't have a case manager?
From what I know of, there's only a couple. And it's the people who can actually think for themselves who don't have case managers. And when I asked them about that, they said, well, there's different rules for different people, pretty much. But since there's mental handicaps, they get things different, like case managers, and since we can do it ourselves, we should try to do it ourselves, kind of, is what they told me.
And so they wanted you to find housing yourself rather than through a case manager.
Well, they wanted me I was supposed to go to some workshops. I was supposed to do with Joe and some other things that I didn't know really I was supposed to do because I didn't have a case manager to tell me what I was supposed to do like everyone else has to.
What is Joe Price's position at the Homeless Lack of Services Center?
He's the housing coordinator. He's the main guy to get everyone housing.
What have you noticed as far as, and be objective about this, I know you're pissed with him, but how many people in the course of your 8.5 months have gotten housing? How long does it take? What's your sense of that?
I know of like five people maybe that's gotten housed. And it's in like the Resitar or the Broadway or one of them little motels in Watsonville, the little studios that are nothing. And most of them end up leaving and coming right back here.
And
they don't want to be there.
I heard that Andy Carcello had a problem with the Watsonville situation. Did you know Andy?
Yeah, I knew Andy pretty good. I was amazed when they kicked him out and he had a heart attack.
Has that happened to anybody else that you know of?
Miss Betty, the old lady Betty, she wouldn't do what they wanted, so they kicked her out onto the street, and she's like 70, 74. She was sleeping at Denny's for weeks, and they knew about it. They wouldn't even go to the bathroom here.
They wouldn't let her go to the bathroom?
No, just for refusing going to a old person's home, like a rest home. They wanted to send her to a place to die, and she didn't want to go. So they kicked her out of here.
How many people, you came in 8 months ago?
Yeah.
How many people who were there then are still there? Have most of them left or most of them still there? What's the deal?
Out of the guys, when I got here, there's very little people here, but almost all of them are still here. There's only two people that's gotten housed out of the guys since I've been here.
And how are the conditions at the Pauley Loft?
We got bed bugs.
Bad.
I mean, you can lift any mattress and see bed bugs.
And what has been the reaction of the administration to this problem?
Well, here's what the administration does. There is a friend of ours that is downstairs with three most sickest people, and he is in a wheelchair himself, and he has a spinal cord injury. And I went to the bathroom and someone onto the floor and one of the staff members handed him a mop and said, now remember, he can't walk. He can't get to the soap. And said, now what are you going to do with that? And embarrassed him and humiliated him in front of a bunch of people. And then there's, Lolene who has asthma really super bad. In the morning, they don't care. If she's out of bed at 7 o'clock, they will literally start spraying around her on her. It literally goes on you. And we have bed bugs really bad, and, there's a lot of stealing going on, and nobody knows what to do because there's no set rules for everybody. There's no heat up in the loft. They take our stuff and throw it away when they feel like it. They have thrown our bikes away. They have
made us blow up a car because they told us we had to move it out of the parking lot when they knew that every 24 hours, when they knew we had a problem with the transmission, would set us up to lose a car. And when they feel like it, they put stuff right back in the compactors. They come out and take homeless people's stuff off the street, cars, whatever they see, blankets. They'll go out of their way 3 and 4 blocks from here, find people's things, and bring them back and put them into the compactor and compact them.
Let me ask you, Michelle, how many people have phones that have a video capability there?
Pretty much, more than half of them, I'd say.
Because, you know, it's... I can listen to you and I can say, you know, people can hear this and say, oh, you know, there's Michelle ranting. Well, there's they got this sour grapes. They got a problem,
right.
You know, but if you are documenting it, pictures of the bed bugs.
We have documentation and proof of everything.
You know, documented accounts by the, you know, by Betty or by any of the other people. Loleen, you say, I don't know any of these people, but
yeah,
you do.
Absolutely.
You know, that, and then posting these accounts online. Of course, I understand people might be reluctant to talk about this for fear they're going to be punished and
right.
kicked out if
oh,
they
yeah.
do. But right now, you guys, how many of you are on the sidewalk with signs protesting?
Well, there's only two of us because everybody's scared. If you protest or stand up against the shelter, you will not be allowed to take showers. You won't be allowed nothing. And I don't understand. I came here 19 years ago when these gates were not up. And, you know, if there wasn't chaos, people just want a little place to hang out, maybe just make their phone calls, wash their clothes, take a shower and eat. What's this gate doing? And they want people to just have a driver's license, social security card, apply for a job, be working, all this stuff. These homeless people are sick. They're literally dying. They're dirty. Who can go look for a job under those circumstances? And the shelter is not helping. They only pick a select few.
Now, have you talked to the Fuhrer, the head of the shelter, Phil Kramer?
Oh, yeah.
What
does
he,
Phil?
What does he say?
Smart Solution speech way back 2.5 months ago when I first started asking for a case manager. So I tried raising my hand. He let 20 people go in front of me before he finally answered me. And then he said, when I said, oh, yes, well, how do we get this case manager you profess to have for all these people? And he said, oh, talk to me after the thing. And then after the thing, he promised me to talk to Serge. And then Serge just blew us off. Yeah, he blew us off. And then Phil, and I said, well, you promised me. You said I could have one. And then with Brian's case, with his discrimination case, he went in and talked to Phil, and Phil acted like he didn't even know what was going on. He said he was crazy. He didn't know what he was talking about. He did not investigate. Nothing.
And have you ever made any attempt to get people to sign a petition and that
yes,
sort of thing?
Yes, we have one going around for a lawyer right now. Brian does have a lawyer appointment on the 5th, but lawyers said they would take his case. Oh, on the 2nd? December 2nd, sorry.
And do you want to say the name of the lawyer, or would you rather not?
What's your name of the lawyer, honey? It's Smart. One of them was Smart Solutions, and the other one's LR something. I got them in my phone, but I'm talking on my phone. I have to look it up. But he does have two lawyers. One appointment wants to see him on the 2nd. He has a really strong case. We do.
Have you had any connection with the other people who have been fighting this case, like Andy Carcero? I know he left.
No, unfortunately not. They have came. We've tried to. It's so hard to get these people because they're homeless and they're tired. To get them together at one point right now, it's just, like, difficult, you know. It's almost impossible.
I hear you. I mean, how long have you been in front of the Homeless Lack of Services Center on the sidewalk as the weather gets colder?
Brian has been out here 2 days, and we've had at least 50 to 75 people say they wanted to come participate, but unfortunately because they're afraid of the ramifications of the shelter, the cops being called, this and that, they haven't done it.
What you might want to do is have them sign a list and make it a private list. That you then show to an attorney or some other trusted person. Again, I don't know what kind of recourse people in a shelter situation have. I take it you all have to sign a thing that says something like you agree to, you don't have tenants' rights and things like that.
I never really read anything specific to that, but I do know that they do not have one set of rules for everybody. They change the rules as they go. And they have different rules that apply to different people at different times. They have one lady in here, Kathy, and I don't think she knows that she's been here 5 years. 5 years.
Yeah. And so, had any experience with folks using the River Street shelter?
there aren't anybody allowed to use the shelter except for the people who live here. I mean, they may get, be able to come in and take a shower every now and then, but they're not allowed to eat or anything else. Unless they work, like clean the kitchen or something, then they're allowed a meal or two. And I heard one staff member tell the other staff member, oh, we put food out there for them. It was a box of apples, and they weren't even good apples. Do they really think that's food?
So a box of food for who are we talking about?
Oh, they sent a box of food out here for the homeless.
Okay, I was asking about, see, there is this thing that, and most people outside, I've been advising them, we've given them a flyer that says if you call the River Street Shelter, get on the waiting list, then you're supposed to have camping tickets against you dismissed if you're on the waiting list when the camping ticket is given
to
you.
I've heard that.
And have you heard any, but how are conditions inside the River Street Shelter, or do you know anything about that? That's nearby.
You know what, River Street Shelter is a separate entity, and it seems like that they have, it's a lot easier over there. Everybody seems more comfortable, and they seem to like the River Street Shelter. They don't have bed bugs. Yeah, and they're all mental patients, really. All with problems with their psyche. They don't have really, they don't want to seem to take the normal people in like us, or even anybody actually that's going to stand up for their rights. Because when you stand up for yourself, they throw you out. That's why Brian's been out here 2 days now.
So what exactly are you asking for from the community that they can help you with? What are you looking for?
What are you looking for from the community to help them? Someone to oversee the place and to control the people that are in charge here, like Phil and Jordan. They do what they want.
Now, have you talked to the Colbys at all? I know there's been some concern about disability problems where people who are disabled don't get the kind of care that they need. There's not in
exactly. I'm one of them. I have 2 surgeries coming up myself, and they don't seem to care. Yeah, they kicked Brian out with his service animal. They actually threw our service animal dog bed away. They made a rule that we can't lay down with them, and we can't keep our dog food outside. We have to feed them at night. Hello? You know, our dogs like to eat throughout the day, and they get hungry, and they tried to control that because of the birds coming around in the poop.
So, you're going to be sleeping there tonight out on the sidewalk, I take it, or is
that? Yeah, well, the police just came a little while ago and told us that we couldn't camp right out front, but we'll be nearby and ready. Yeah, Brian's not going anywhere. Yeah, he said he'll go to jail or whatever happens.
So Brian's going to be staying there in spite of the police warning, and you will be nearby.
Yep.
Well, listen, stay in touch. I mean, it's not much consolation for you, but if you want, we'll continue to report what's going on out there. And do you want people to contact you by phone?
Sure. I do have a Gmail, MichelleYRice1962@gmail.com.
You have to go through that and do it slowly and spell it.
Okay. Michelle, MichelleY, Rice, R-I-C-E, 1962@gmail.com.
Okay, hold it. Let me get that, let me see if I got that right. It's Michelle E-Y, do I have that right?
No, just Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Y-Rice.
And then just Rice, Michelle, there's no Y in there, okay.
Yeah, it's Michelle Y. Rice, that's my middle name.
So it's Michelle Y as in you, Rice,
1962@gmail.com. Yes, or I could be contacted. Mm-hmm. Brian can be reached at this number, 346-9756.
346-9756, 346-9756, if you want to reach Michelle or Brian. And again, the email for
Show your support. Carry a sign.
Yeah, so you got some signs. So what are your? So again, tell us what your signs say one more time.
Well, I can read you one of mine and one of Brian's. This one says, HSC staff all have computers that were really donated for us homeless. Instead, they kept them for themselves. When they first start working here, they come by bike, bus, skateboard, or walking, and within 1 month, they got a new car. Loft manager Jordan has only been here a little over a year and has had at least 3 vacations paid. One of those vacations was about a month long. Wow. Yet the residents here and homeless beyond this state are hungry and no one seems to care. Donation money is used to buy paint and rocks, and plants not used for us, so don't donate. We don't see it.
How's the food?
And here's one of Brian's.
Go ahead.
Brian, would you like to read tonight?
No, we won't go.
Okay, this Brian Stein says he's been here over 8 months, no case manager. He's now kicked out. HSE lies, lies, lies.
Wow. So, you know, I do have Street Spirits if you want to sell them. That's a newspaper that you can get a buck for if you sell it. And,
okay.
And when I drive back from my show, I can pass by and pass you some to sell if you want.
Oh, that would be great.
I will do that.
Okay.
Anything else you want to say before we...
I just want to say that if you guys can come down and show some support for taking this day down and being able to... to get the services we deserve without discriminating against us. You know, show somebody you care. I mean, yeah, honk when you go by, scream for some, you know, showing our support. That would be super great.
Fair enough. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
And call again if you'd like. And if you have more reports, you can call 423-4833, the number you called earlier today. That's the Huff line. Anybody
okay.
with similar problems or wants to give reports about street situations, 423-4833.
I'll keep you posted daily. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Michelle and Brian down there at 115 Coral Street. In our very own Santa Cruz, trying to do what they need to do. Let's see here. Continuing with a little more of Keith McHenry's account, which we interrupted with both in-studio discussion with Abby Samuels and then this report from Michelle and Brian about the protests they're doing on the sidewalk outside 115 Coral Street. Let's see where we are with... this earlier account.
And that, but they would also have to get all these permits to as well.
Well, everything has to be in order.
Yeah. And the other, similar to Palm Springs issue, is that the area would be relatively inaccessible. And they felt like, the woman I talked to felt like they were just trying to hide the homeless and get them out of sight and, you know, and try not to, and she thought there may be the main shelter might be partially responsible, that they're feeling competition or something. But she pointed out that a lot of the people, if not, you know, most of the people they were feeding were actually 86 from the shelter and therefore had no other place to get food. So,
sent to starve them out or drive them out of town.
Yeah, and this is that. So, those are like
get them to behave themselves.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This whole like the home, and then you may have heard, and I don't know if I've mentioned this, but Phoenix, Arizona's.
And I believe that Keith was talking about Palm Springs in this last discussion about the earnest graduate from a college who's. Honestly and sincerely discussing with Keith how it one solution to the homeless is to starve them out. And this is part of the theory that the only reason they're homeless people is because they will not accept the wonderful services that are being offered, which of course is ridiculous, but not according to those who feather their nests with the mythology that homeless people are either crazy, drunk, idle, bums, criminals, or just hermits who are unwilling to be civilized.
This was kind of odd. This woman who was the director of the Arizona Coalition of the Homeless actually announced that no one should share food outside because it was just encouraging people to be homeless, and that they were trying to have it voluntary.
Only enabling the service resistant.
But one second, let me get this. This is cool. Hey, it's Keith with Feeding Up Homes. But you know,
let's eavesdrop on Keith McHenry's conversation with someone else, at least half of it.
anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz, which is where I spend most of my time now. And I've been and then encouraging the formation of new food on bombs chapters. So those are things I've been organizing around. So like Venice Food on Bombs served today for the first time and on the boardwalk again after years of not being on the boardwalk, which is a huge challenge to LA, police department, who've been trying to drive keep them off of there. And so that was really hopeful. And then the boardwalk, the Food on Bombs meal on the boardwalk, we did the first one today and we're going to do another one next Tuesday, so I'm excited about that. And then Ogden, Utah woman is doing Food on Bombs and just starting one up again in Ogden. So there's been like a, and I think there's going to be a Santa Ana Food on Bombs, and so I'm like psyched about all these new chapters getting started. And then, but there is like a wave of in the last few years, and particularly it's gotten very heavy in the last like 2 years or so, this theory that if you feed people outside they won't go get drug rehabilitation and a house. And so there's like this whole kind of new, it's sort of a similar idea as what happened with the broken windows theory, where like if you cleaned up all the people panhandling and fair evaders and all that, then you will stop murders and rapes and those kind of crimes. So this one is an anti-poor person, anti-homeless person version of the same theory. And there's actually consultants that have been hired by city governments to help them promote this ideology that people should go indoors to the shelters to eat, even though actually a lot of people are not even allowed to eat at these places. And this theory that somehow if you went into these shelters, you would get a job, they could help you get a job, you're a drug addict or alcoholic, that's why you live on the streets and you get drug rehab and stuff like that. And that's just this crazy myth. So there's like a bunch of cities in the, like Phoenix, Arizona, is pushing this idea. Fort Lauderdale has been promoting it. There's quite a number of cities. Another one is Palm Springs. So there's the pushback on that. Then I know, like, for instance, there's all these, there's another way relative to the election. There's a sit live law that's, an anti-homeless encampment law being voted on tonight in San Francisco. Around homeless issues in Santa Cruz, if the developer candidates win, then there'll be even harsher, attacks against homeless people here. So that's the... Well, here it's like just living outside. If you're seen outside, that's not like cool. And actually, we've been having a this group called the Guardian Angels have been talking about how they're going to help clean up the homeless. They've been going around, finding home. What I've seen so far is a few people have been confronted by them for, maybe they're criminals because they're outside. But they also have mentioned that the homeless is one of their targets with another right-wing vigilante group here called Take Back Santa Cruz. So those are the things going on here.
And just a brief interruption here of the to look at the law that actually was passed in San Francisco, or a story about it. San Francisco, this is in curbed.com, which doesn't sound too promising, but I've never seen this website before. San Francisco boasts to confiscate homeless tents, fails to pass funding to house them. Though largely symbolic, voters choose to ban tents on city streets. The results on Tuesday's elections, that's, of course, November 8th elections, have dazed and confused many. As far as local politics go, the results of two housing measures still have some scratching their heads. Proposition Q, which ostensibly makes it verboten for people to pitch tents on sidewalks, won. The proposition was sparked by the bevy bevy of tents that popped up along Division in the Soma and the Mission during and after the Super Bowl 50. Its author, Supervisor Mark Farrell, told the Chronicle, "Win or lose, it's critically important that we have a policy conversation about our homeless situation in San Francisco, how we are going to make a real difference for those who are sleeping on the streets." And, of course, banning tents isn't having a conversation at all. It's driving people away. But if you don't want to seem cruel, and you also don't want to seem like you're violating their rights, and you also don't want to seem pointless, because when you drive people away from one place, they come somewhere else, then you fluff it up and cover it with this kind of cosmetic language. That's my interjection. The story continues. Homeless advocates noted that such a law would be cruel, considering San Francisco doesn't have nearly enough housing or shelter beds for our city's homeless population. Our real loss won't be this hollow ban on tents, Jennifer Friedenbach, executive director for the Coalition on Homelessness, tells Curb San Francisco. The real loss is Propositions J and S, which Proposition Q proponents managed to kill with their vicious anti-homeless rhetoric. Voters turned down Proposition S, which specifically was homeless-centered and actually did get a huge majority of the votes, but of course failed anyway. Though seemingly ahead, Proposition S needed two-thirds of the vote to pass, a requirement for certain tax-related laws in the city. It's currently trailing at only 62%. This was a story in a website on November 10th. And I think it did lose. I don't know. It's not clear that all the ballots are even in now. Santa Cruz still has ballots outstanding, and there may be a second member of the so-called the Santa Cruz Four who ran in opposition to the Cynthia Matthews slate. New City Council is what they called themselves. Only one of them won, Chris Crone. And a second one, however, has came close, and it's, I suppose, it's still possible she could win, Sandy Brown. Ironically, these are the two worst ones in the slate of four. They're both former politicians, more Crone than Sandy Brown, who was simply an appointee to the Citizens Police Review Board and probably other things I've never heard about. But they're okay people, you know, I mean. But will they, in a meaningful and strong way, push for rent control, push for accountability of the police, push for civil rights for homeless people? Crone made some token efforts, but quickly fell in line with the majorities in city council when he was on the council 1998 to 2002. And as I already mentioned, I could go into his record at greater length. Apparently all my, maybe my attacks on him helped him win. Who knows? Anyway, continuing with the story about San Francisco, you can't spend $700,000 demonizing homeless people and expect voters to pay for solutions that they've been told by Proposition Q proponents already exist, adds Friedenbach. In other words, apparently, according to Friedenbach, and I didn't follow this campaign in San Francisco at all, those who wanted to ban tents on the sidewalk were doing so under the sort of fluffy claim that there's places for them to go, and all you got to do is make sure they don't tent on the sidewalk and they'll go to some better places. And then at the same time, of course, ballot measures that are running that might provide some better places, although not many, it seems to fly in the face of the rhetoric, which is there are already better places, which, of course, is part of the mythology of those who want to run the homeless away. They have to claim that's true. It's been true in Santa Cruz for three decades, and it's been true in San Francisco as well. It's true, I think, in most cities where this happens, but, hey, I'm not an expert on all cities, so... And there's another little addition. A recent study by the University of California researchers and the Coalition on Homelessness surveyed 351 homeless people in San Francisco, finding that 46% had had things confiscated, 38% had had their belongings destroyed by the city. It's kind of like being in a war zone if you're homeless, kind of. And you're expected to remain peaceful and nonviolent and mellow and not shout and not disturb the populace and not upset your allies. All these things are completely unrealistic expectations for people. Some more, however, from our very own Freedom Sleeper Food Not Bombs guy, Keith McHenry, who I remind you is on the telephone to someone else. Although even on the phone and even listening only to his half of the conversation, I think it's really educational to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but they don't do that. I think they had that image at the beginning when they first started, but they totally abandoned that and they've just gone into this kind of, we're going to rough people up that we think aren't, that are criminals, and homeless are.
And he's talking about the guardian angels. Apparently the fellow at the other end of the line is defending the guardian angels. The guys that walk around with red berets, kind of in packs, their contention is that they're a calming, law-encouraging group.
Yeah, well, they just started a new chapter here in solidarity with this anti-homeless vigilante group called Take Back Santa Cruz. So that's like kind of another frightening specter. Well, I should probably go because I just got to this protest and I'm supposed to be helping out with it. So, but it's good talking with you. Yeah. Did you go to the Food Not Bombs meal today in Venice? Right. Well, yeah. Well, next Tuesday, you know, there'll be a Food Not Bombs in on the boardwalk in Venice Beach, and it would be great if you were able to come out and help. So I won't be there, but no, there's like a Zorro and a whole bunch of really amazing people will be there. Yeah. No, this is a young guy. He's been riding around on a bike handing out burritos and stuff, and he decided to start a Food Not Bombs. So, yeah. Cool. Okay, man, thanks. Yeah, take care. Okay, we certainly will, man. Bye-bye.
That was a report from Southern California.
Yeah, that was somebody in Southern California that wanted to know who to vote for.
Oh, well,
I mean, call an anarchist to ask who to vote for.
Late in the game. It's only got another 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's kind of
half hour, actually.
Yeah, half hour, and it's probably, you know, already, I don't know who's. I think they might have selected Trump. I know why. It seemed like corporate America wasn't too into Trump, but maybe behind, they were trying to be cagey. I don't know. Hard to say. But anyway, there we are.
Anything else you want to add for our update here?
Well, I don't know. I hope that people keep protesting and. Let's see, what other things? There's a bunch of stuff around police activity in Santa Cruz that people are talking about.
Well, I know that
we had long conversations with some of the Sean, who was shot to death by the Santa Cruz police.
Sean Arlt. I know there's a protest coming up on Thursday by Huff and the Revolutionary Tendency at Cop Corner, which Food Not Bombs, I'm sure, will be involved in.
Oh, what time?
1:30 on Thursday, day after tomorrow.
Oh, can't you do it on another day?
Well, I wish we could. I mean, we probably can in the future.
Yeah. Because then it means I've got a protest on every damn day of the week. And
I need
a day off.
And we actually did two protests at Cop Corner, Laurel, and Center Streets right outside the police station on the sidewalk. Pretty positive response from people in cars. And we decided that the best thing to do, Steve Argue, who was a large part of the motivation for this protest and created his own flyer, but who didn't make it to the last protest because he was ill, and others have suggested, as you heard Keith suggest, that we do it on another day, and the weekend was suggested where people can actually join us. So we actually slated a protest for Saturday. That's the day after tomorrow. But then we learned it was raining. Plus, we had some other logistical problems, to speak kindly. We don't have enough people for this to really organize it well. But we did tentatively set the protest for a week from Saturday, which will be on the 26th at 1:30. This is a protest concerning itself with demands hailing on the most recent community concern that Sean Artlett's killer, the police officer or officers who killed him, that have their names exposed to the community so we know who they are, and also that the video and audio taken of this also be shown to the community. And as I've mentioned before, we got a sympathetic response from, it was kind of a sympathetic response, actually, I've got to say that, from the Sentinel and from a reporter who did a photo coverage of the protest that we did last Thursday on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And by the way, if you like hearing more about the Freedom Sleepers or reading my take on it and also sort of related homeless issues, I have done a weekly report on the Freedom Sleepers every week for the last 70 weeks. That's hard to believe and kind of ridiculous in a way, but there you are. I mean, I actually have a lot of differences with the whole idea of spending one's time in a kind of a what seems like a token protest once a week in front of City Hall on the sidewalk, and I've talked about this on the air before. But I'm also a supporter of people who find that's the best way to do it, and that's the way they intend to do it, and nothing else is happening. It's the only game in town. So I try to provide support as best I can, not to the extent that ours brief studio guest Abby Samuels has been doing. Very spends a lot of time, I think sometimes too much time, because I think she overstresses herself and it produces problems for her and sometimes conflicts with others, myself included. But she's there, and it's happening. If you want to read about it, go to the Santa Cruz Indie Bay. You can also go to a Facebook page, The Freedom Sleepers, where Steve Plaich posts a lot of photos, and of course Abby Samuels on the Freedom Sleepers, or perhaps it's the Food Not Bombs Facebook page, posts a video. For example, the video of Rangers just harassing people unlawfully, inappropriately, and finally being driven away by the presence of video and the knowledge that their behavior is going to be made public. Or who knows, maybe they just got tired of doing it. Or if you don't respond to a bully, you know, she or he gets bored and goes on to bully somebody else. Maybe that's what it is. There's an interesting claim, and that was one of the claims that I think Eagle was going to talk about. The guest I was going to have on my show, who I don't think I'm going to have time to play his earlier conversation with me about harassment at the Metro, which Pat Colby documented to some extent and then encouraged him to talk to me, and he did speak with me. Pat Colby's another activist. I call her Pushback Pat. Don't always get along with Pat all the time, but she's out there. She's living the homeless life herself, and she's not voluntarily homeless. She's had serious problems with the management of the building, the John Stewart Company, which she and her brother John Colby have talked about at some length and complained about to different government authorities. So, there is some information online about harassment of homeless people. I encourage people to post more because I think it's a really much more effective to see what the Santa Cruz Police and Rangers and First Alarm and Panther Protective Services, and if they do it, Guardian Angels, do than to hear some critic angrily talk about it, or even someone who wants to be even-handed report some grim details about it. Back to activist Keith McHenry again. About 9 days ago at Freedom Sleep Out 70. I'll have, you know, more kind of fill in for the last week when I come back on Sunday. We'll be kind of hopefully bringing us all up to date. But a lot of these stories, even though they're a little dated, aren't really dated at all. They are unresolved abuses that, if you tolerate the bullies, they grow bolder. If you ignore abuses, they continue or they multiply, or at least that's been my fear, and I think, although it varies, I think my experience. And again, the Sean Arlt protests, and also the protest demanding an end to class racial profiling in Santa Cruz, a demand of real transparency rather than the sort of half-assed transparency that Abby was talking about. I didn't want to argue with her in the studio. She didn't have the time to do it, and I don't mind arguing, but we have different points of view on that. She spends time with ACLU. Admittedly, I talk with Vice Chair Steve Plaich about it in a friendly way, and then I learn he doesn't even put stuff on the agenda that he says he's going to do, but doesn't do. So it's important to deal with police abuses here in Santa Cruz. It's important to deal with the issues. A lot of people are out there ranting about Trump, as they should be in many ways. But some of this is Democratic Party motivated, or I don't want to say controlled. I don't think it is controlled, but it is. They're using the kind of arguments that Democratic Party candidates used without recognizing that the same arguments apply to the Democratic Party candidates. They're the same warmongering corporate assholes, whether you're talking about Clinton or Trump. And the fact that if you're going to emphasize that Trump uses a lot of misogynist language and he speaks his mind and he's a racist in a more direct way, but you're not going to talk about the policies that the Obama administration has been following in most deportations ever in the last 8 years, and that these are some sort of good guys. You're going to watch out because your protest movement is going to be co-opted and will simply be sort of a forum for Democratic Party politicians, which I think was the problem with the anti-war movement. In the movement against the war in Iraq, you know, there was a lot of hostility to the war, but the Democrats co-opted it. And I used to say, well, in a way, it's better to have the Republicans in power than the Democrats, because at least then the Democrats are saying the right things. But the problem is, it doesn't matter if you say the right things; it's what you do. And if you're getting into power to continue to maintain the same kind of warmongering policies and create new wars in Libya and in Yemen, and maintain the good war in Afghanistan, and send more troops into Iraq, and essentially create ISIS is what you're doing. Or if you're doing that, then you've got to be careful who your allies are in this struggle. And the way to do that is to just simply focus on the issues. If Democrats, Libertarians, Republicans, whoever, want to join on issues locally for real rent control and renter protection, for real police accountability and community control of police, for real civil rights for homeless people, it doesn't matter what their party labels are. But if the kind of talking points they're using are these sort of half-assed, weak-kneed things that we want the police to wear cameras, but we don't think that they should have to show their video publicly when demanded to do so. We are friends with Sheriff Hart. There's a lot of this kind of do-si-doing with Sheriff Hart with the ACLU is the impression I'm getting. I probably should make a mention of the fact that I'm... Abby Samuels was commending me for my success in the Coastal Commission struggle to stop the ban on RVs in the city and county. We did stall the ban. I did, and the Coastal Commission stopped the ban temporarily in the city because they wouldn't allow a permit for the coastal zone. And in the county, the enforcement staff has also told the local, I guess it's the planning commission of the county, that they cannot enforce their anti-RV ban in the county along the coast. But they are currently working very hard, as they were working with the city for the last year, to create a law where they will be able to impose this ban. That's the problem. So, I was one of the things I suggested that the ACLU get off its ass and do something about, just as resolution or look into it. One gets the sense they're trying to do some things. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about them, though. I'll move on past that. Again, though, I think whatever organization you're dealing with, it's the issues that are important. And if the issue is the Sean Arlt shooting and people want to sit around and heal things instead of demand that the poison be squirted out and the poison be removed, that the thing that's causing the problem, which isn't just, we just don't have adequate mental health facilities. I would say more facilities for folks in crisis is really important. But the people who start flinging this kind of language around are often justifying police behavior in these situations. And that cannot and should not and must not be done. And organizations that do that, and people who are doing that, I think, are missing the point, in my view. The Surveillance Camera Public Records Act request that I put in, not about cameras on police officers, which is probably an improvement, sure. But I'm talking about the cameras that surveil us every day and every night in Santa Cruz, wherever they are, and there are some of them. I asked to know the locations of the cameras, how much they cost, how long their film is retained or their video is retained, who gets to see it, and so forth and so on. And I have been persistently stalled. In fact, now it's being stalled past the city council meeting where this issue is supposedly going to be discussed. And I haven't heard a peep from either Abby or Steve of the ACLU that they care a damn about this, that the public records are being stalled. No complaints from the ACLU. That's too bad. There should be. We should be doing this together. We should be doing this loudly and strong, and we might get the kind of action that the Black Lives Matter got in San Francisco. So, a little more, and then I got to hit the road because I think Uncle Dennis, if he's not coming in himself, and I think he probably isn't, but someone will be taking over his show, and I will myself be putting on one of his old shows in the event that he's not. And there isn't somebody covering for him. He does a show from the cream to the dregs from 8 to 11 every Thursday. And this is Thursday, and 8 is fast coming up. So just let me quickly advise you, because I'm going to probably be leaving quickly here. I have to cut myself off rather abruptly. Contact me at 423-4833 if you have any questions about the show, if you have any suggestions on where a transmitter site for this station can be placed. I can pass that on to the collective. If you want to be on my program, if you want to become a programmer yourself, 423-4833. That's the off-air number for me and for Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And now more from the Freedom Sleep Out 70 on election night.
There he is, constantly complaining, folks. Malingering, just it's the life of Riley.
I'm here in solidarity with a lumpen proletariat. So,
I am
a lumpen proletariat, right? So,
What about Sean Arlt? Have you heard it? Do you have any other... heard of any other protests planned?
No, I don't know any other protests. I just happened to, hear from one of his closest friends, basically what the police are saying is not accurate.
In what way?
And, one of them is that he would never attack an officer, he was a really kind, gentle person, and that pretty much the entire story that the police have put out is not exactly accurate.
So this is more a general comment about his disposition.
Yeah, disposition.
This guy was not a witness to any of it.
No, this woman was not a witness, but was, really, really close to him. For